It's the most wonderful time of the year. With the kids jingle belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year. It's the happiest season of all. With those holiday and gay happy meetings when friends come to call. It's the happiest season.
It's the happiest season of them all, everybody. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas to all my parapatriots out there. Thank you for joining me this week on the Christmas episode of the Paranormal Patriot. As always, this week wearing the Santa-shaped tinfoil hat, I am your host. My name is Tom Velasquez. Again, thank you for joining me. We're going to run the gamut of topics this week. We're going to talk about customs and traditions and history that we used to do in the Victorian era of Christmas. The Victorian era originated Christmas, and to this day, we use a lot of customs and trends that they used back then, except for one. And we're going to talk about what it is and how I would like to see it come back and why I'd like to see it come back. Then we're going to talk about, of course, the impeachment, because my inbox was full of people riling me up, trying to rile me up about impeachment. I'm going to talk to you about what a quote-unquote friend of mine said to me, and he crossed the line as far as I'm concerned. We're going to go over that. And then nothing says Merry Christmas to you and yours more than the National Guard kicking in your door, arresting you and your family, and taking all your possessions just because you would not give up your firearms. And I'm looking squarely at you, Virginia. What are you going to do about it? We're going to talk about what Virginia's going to do about it, and we're going to talk about the consequences and the ramifications of what will happen in Virginia and how it will affect the rest of this country. So you do not want to miss this episode of the Paranormal Patriot. Sit back, relax, open that mind. Merry Christmas. You are listening to the Paranormal Patriot. I will be right back.
It's always nice to look out the window and see those very first few flakes of snow. And later on we can go outside and create the impression of an angel that just fell from the sky. When February rolls around,
everybody, it's Tom Velasquez, host of the Paranormal Patriot, and I wanted to take a quick second out of the show to wish you and yours a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. We have done phenomenal things this year with the show, and I could not have done it without you, my listeners. So for this holiday season, I wish you family, I wish you friends, I wish you fun. These are the times where memories are made, and I wish you memories. I wish everybody makes great memories and great times are had by all. So again, from all of us here at the Paranormal Patriot to all of my listeners of this show, we wish you a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. We are now officially right at Christmas time, and it is a time of year that can take even the most jaded and grouchy person and bring a little cheer into their lives. I remember as a kid, and I know my kids now, they love this time of year, not because they have a couple weeks off of vacation and they get loaded with presents, but because it's just there's something about this time of year that brings out the best in people. We owe the Christmas traditions and customs that we have today to two things. That is the pagan winter festivals that the pagans used to have, but we also owe most of our Christmas traditions and customs to the Victorian era Christmases that they had in England. Now, in England, the Victorian era ran from about 1837 to 1901, and that coincided with the reign and the death of Queen Victoria. But those customs and traditions that they had in England were brought over here to America, and we still use, and we do most of those today. We still send Christmas cards. We still decorate Christmas trees. It's kind of going by the wayside, but there are some people who still go door-to-door caroling, and we stuff stockings with candy. Christmas, well, at least as most Americans celebrate it, really is a product of Victorian England. But in the past few decades, one of the most interesting Victorian Christmas traditions has been almost completely lost from memory. Now, British humorist Jerome K. Jerome, as part of his introduction to the anthology of Christmas ghost stories titled Told After Supper in 1891, he said, "Whenever five or six English-speaking people meet around a fire on Christmas Eve, they start telling each other ghost stories. Nothing satisfies us on Christmas Eve but to hear each other tell authentic anecdotes about specters." Now, the practice of gathering around the fire on Christmas Eve to tell ghost stories was as much a part of Christmas for the Victorian English as Santa Claus is to us. Every now and then, traces of this now-forgotten tradition occasionally appear in noticeable places at Christmas time, but their significance is often overlooked. For instance, one verse of Andy Williams' classic Christmas song that you heard at the beginning of this show, "It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year," clearly says, "There'll be scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of Christmases long, long ago." We hear that, but we don't comprehend what it's saying because it's such a recognizable song. We're just singing the lyrics. Nobody stops to question, why are we saying ghost stories around Christmas? But the most obvious example of how Victorian ghost stories have persisted to some degree in modern Christmas celebrations is, of course, Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. Some argue that Dickens' Christmas Carol single-handedly saved the winter holiday from dying out during the Industrial Revolution. Now, at that time when England was no longer interested in celebrating Christmas, Dickens reintroduced many centuries-old traditions with his instant holiday classic. To this day, it has become such a part of Christmas in its various film and theatrical versions that people don't even wonder why Dickens chose, of all things, four ghostly visitors to bring about Ebenezer Scrooge's transformation from a miserly curmudgeon to a selfish gentleman who would do anything for anyone. Isn't there something inherently unseasonable about ghosts? Don't ghosts belong with the ghouls and goblins on Halloween? Well, for Victorian England, not so. The reason for that. Now, again, I got to go back a long way on this because it's not Christmas that we celebrate now. It's not just Victorian era. We put a lot of paganism in every one of our holidays, but Christmas is one of them. The reason that we celebrate Christmas. Now, what in America and in the Christian world, what do we celebrate? We celebrate Christ's birth. But it's pretty universally known that Christ was not born on December 25th. What our Christian scholars of the past did is they took a pagan holiday, which is the winter solstice, which is the longest night of the year, which falls on December 21st or December 22nd. And they took December 25th and turned it into Christmas, Christ Mass. And there is where the paganism comes into. But if you look at the pagan holiday or pagan experience, an instance of the winter solstice, again, it's the longest night of the year, but it also is a day when they say, and I know I mentioned this over Halloween, the veil is thinning. That was my whole subject of the month, but they say that the veil between both worlds is the thinnest on the longest night of the year, which is December 21st to December 22nd, so it only makes sense to talk ghost stories then. Ghost stories on Christmas. It doesn't make sense in our day. We think of Santa Claus and snowmen and reindeer. We don't think of ghosts. But when you think of Christmas, it is really a celebration of the winter solstice. It's the dying of the light at the longest night of the year, and then the rebirth of the light, because after that, the days get longer. The light is reborn. And it's an analogy of Jesus Christ. He dies, and then he is risen again. That's what the Christian holidays, I mean, and I hope I don't offend anybody, but that's what the Christian holidays are all about, is they're derived from pagan holidays. Easter was basically a pagan holiday worshiping Ishtar. But ask yourself, does it really matter? What matters is the holiday season. This literally the whole month of December all the way through January, which is the new year. It brings the best out of people. I remember growing up, I was the middle child of two older brothers and two younger sisters, and my older brothers used to beat the snot out of me on a daily basis, except for Christmas Day. I remember when I was a kid, I was sitting at the kitchen table, I just got Domino Rally, and I was setting it up, and my two brothers walked up the stairs, and I'm like, oh gosh, I'm going to get hit. So I cringed, and I clenched, and I kind of protected myself as they walked by. They didn't do anything. They just walked by. You know why? Because it was Christmas. There's something magical about Christmas. It doesn't matter why you celebrate Christmas. You can celebrate it as Christ's birth, as long as you're remembering the birth of Christ and acknowledging that. You can celebrate it as the winter solstice, the dying of the light, the longest night of the year, and the rebirth of the light. It doesn't matter. What matters is that during this time of year, people are a little less on edge. People are a little more forgiving. And that is magical. That's not paganism. That's not Victorian era ghost stories. That's not Santa Claus. That's the magic of the season. It's the rebirth of the light. Everything is dead. Everything is dying. All the trees have lost their leaves. Everything looks blah. Here in Michigan, it's cloudy 90% of the time. Everything's dreary. But it doesn't matter, because Christmas is this time of year. One thing I want to do, and I'm going to start it this year, is I'm going to tell a ghost story on Christmas. It's kind of in remembrance of our ancestors, because that's what essentially Christmas is all about. It's remembering and reliving and reminiscing. It's building memories. This is a great time of year to build memories with family and friends and just enjoy one another's company. Enjoy it. Say a ghost story or two. Let's bring that back into the fold, into the Christmas traditions. It doesn't make it bad. It's remembering. In your ghost story could be talking about your grandfather to your grandkids or to your kids. And that's how I'm going to do it. I'm going to remember my grandparents to my kids, so they know who their great-grandparents were. So their memory is remembered. So they're not forgotten. So they can go and tell their kids about their great-grandfather and grandmother and what they did and how they did it. I think it's a tradition that can be served well. Remembering our past is not a bad thing. Some of us need to let go of our past, and this is the time to do it. You remember the past, and if you need to let go of it, let go of it. Things are possible at Christmas time. There's something magical about this time of year, and take advantage of that. Build a tradition. All of us have Christmas traditions. We take the kids out every Christmas Eve and drive around and look at lights. We love doing that. We turn Christmas music on the radio, and then we come home, we make hot chocolate, we get into pajamas, and we watch a Polar Express every Christmas for the ever since the Polar Express has been out. That is our go-to movie. We turn off all the lights, turn the TV on, and pop in the Polar Express. It's a great tradition, and the thing is, our kids love it. And you know what they're going to do? They're going to do the same thing. They're going to say, hey, your grandpa and grandma, this is how I grew up. We used to have cocoa and cookies and sit around the fire and watch the Polar Express. And those kids are going to love that. And they're going to make that a tradition. It may not be the Polar Express. It may be, you know, the Shuttle Express. And who knows how far the future is. But it's the same thing. It's building traditions and having traditions. So when your kids look back, they can say, that was a great time. Those were great memories. And they passed them along. So you, even though you may be long gone, you're not forgotten. You know, as I was growing up, I remember every year we opened one present on Christmas Eve. And every Christmas Eve I looked forward to it. We'd all sit around and we'd have a nice dinner. We'd have family and friends come over on Christmas Eve. It was great. And my tradition with my kids evolved. You know, things are different nowadays. Everybody's go, go, go. You have to stop. You have to step back and say, all right, we need to slow down for at least one day of the year and just say, family is what's important. Family should be important every day, but Christmas. I have a son who was born on Christmas Eve, so we all have family and friends over during the day. We celebrate his birthday. They all go home, we all hop in the car, and sometimes we have family and friends go with us. And you know what we're doing? Is those kids that are with their parents, that are our friends, that go with us, they love going around and looking at the lights. So the next year, they're like, Mom and Dad, can we go look at the lights like we did last year? And that's a tradition. It's something to remember your youth. Stay young. In this world, we're too busy being adults all the time. It would benefit each and every one of us to hearken back to our youth. And part of that would be telling ghost stories or reminiscing about grandparents, remembering our loved ones at this magical time of year. Let me know what you did. This is the week of Christmas, so let me know what you did. What are your traditions for Christmas with your family? And I will let everybody know. Who knows? Somebody may listen to what I say your tradition is and say, oh my gosh, that is a great idea. And that would start a tradition for that family. You may change a family's Christmas for a good way. Let me know. Contact me at ghostseeker4@charter.net and let me know what your family tradition is. We're going to be right back. And then we're going to get into some politics. I'm going to start by telling you what a former coworker and I had a discussion about yesterday. And then we're going to get into the ultimate Christmas gift of Virginia. Sit back, relax, open that mind. Have a magical, magical Christmas day. You are listening to The Paranormal Patriot. My name is Tom Balassus. I'll be right back.
I made it through the year and I did not even collapse. Gotta say thank God for that. I'm torn between what keeps me whole and what tears me in half. I'll fall apart or stay intact. Tired eyes, I stumble back to bed. I need to realize my sorry life's not hanging.
Hey, this is the Paranormal Patriot, Tom Balassus, and this week's show, there are no ads. I have one Christmas wish for all my listeners. I want every single one of my listeners to start a new tradition. And if you've already had this tradition, good for you. Keep it going. But I want every one of my listeners to start and help someone or something in and around their neighborhood and their town. You can donate to the Humane Society, volunteer anywhere, help a homeless person, please help our veterans. Whatever you can do, do it with your family. Build this tradition between you and your family so it's something that you look forward to and something that you can be proud of, and more importantly, something that helps your community. One community at a time. This Christmas season is the season I want my listeners to make a difference. I want my listeners to be better people and be admired and respected and honored in their communities. And I most importantly want you to help those who are less fortunate.
And with this Christmas wish is missed, the point I could convey. If only I could find the words to say to let you know how much you've touched my life, because here's where you're finding me, in the exact same place as New Year's Eve. From a lack of my persistency, we're less than half as close as I wanna be. In the first time that you opened your eyes, did you realize that you would be my savior? In the first breath that left your lips, did you know that it would change this world?
It's almost a little awkward to go from what we've been talking about before to politics on this show, but this is what my listeners want, and that's what I'm going to give them, because I received a lot of emails this week asking me what I thought about the Virginia gun law in the implementation of the National Guard. So I'm going to talk about that, but I want to talk to you real quick about this whole impeachment thing, because people are idiots. Honestly, I hate to put it that way, but I have learned this week that there is a vast amount of people that have no idea how government works, and these are the people that are voting. They're voting for the Democrats, because people were stunned that Donald Trump, they woke up and the next day Donald Trump was still president. They didn't realize that he's not impeached. I talked about it earlier, where they haven't even sent the articles over to the Senate. But it was kind of funny because Donald Trump was in my home state of Michigan in Battle Creek, and he started his campaign Christmas rally, and he wasn't impeached. By the end of the rally, he was impeached. Well, I have a friend. I'll call him a friend. I haven't talked to him in a long time. He just friend requested me on Facebook just recently, and I accepted because him and I got along pretty well. We used to work together. During the campaign event, the rally, we'll call it, in Battle Creek, he said something about a former congressman, John Dingell, who is a congressman from Michigan who literally served during the Congress of Abraham Lincoln. He'd been in Congress forever, and he died. And he made a comment about John Dingell that maybe he's looking up, basically saying that John Dingell was in hell. And I've had people ask me, what do you think about that comment, Tom? And I'm going to tell you, I think it was a stupid comment. It didn't need to be said. It was just there to provoke and poke the bear. You know, this is something Donald Trump does. And this friend of mine said, POS Trump. Trump is a POS. And he quoted what Donald Trump said. And I just said, you know, okay. Donald Trump said something horrible. I'm not going to deny that. And I'm not going to defend the man for saying it because I don't agree with what he said. Just let it go. But John Dingell, the man who he was referring to, said pretty much the same thing. He said, on behalf of all the veterans, you can take two flying jumps and go to hell, Donald Trump. In a tweet, it's right there for everybody to see. So it's okay. It's okay. This is my issue. And I responded with that quote on Facebook, which, looking back, I broke one of my cardinal rules. I don't want to get into arguments on Facebook because of this very reason. The guy blew up. Are you trying to defend this guy? You're trying to defend this guy for what he said? This guy is dead. He can't defend himself. Is this what you're teaching your kids? And bam. Now, some of you may think it's not a big deal, but the minute you mention kids, my kids, on any social media platform, I'm going to go off on you. Because me, as a parent, this isn't me as the paranormal patriot. This is me as a parent. I shield my kids. I do not post pictures of my kids. I try not to talk about my kids as much as possible on social media. Because today's social media is a dangerous place to be. I will not post pictures of my kids on social media any more than I have to. Don't you bring my kids. And the way I raise my kids, listen, my kids are great students. And more importantly, and this is what I told this guy, I'm very proud of the way I raise my kids. They are good students, but more importantly, they are respected and admired in the community. Everybody that comes in contact with them, we get people coming out of the blue that we've never met before, coming up and telling us how well-mannered, well-behaved, and how respectful our children are. That is a testament to what I was raised to do. I'm just continuing the trend. I was raised to respect your elders, to be kind, to be gentle, to not be a hooligan. I'm very proud of the fact that I've never been arrested. I've never gotten any major trouble. I've never been suspended from school. I'm very proud of that. My kids can say the same thing. So what I'm trying to do is raise my kids to be good people. So for this guy to sit there and tell me, I can't believe you're raising your kids like that. Well, time out. Now you hit the panic button on me. Now you hit the batshit crazy button. Because I'm going to go off on you. I'll let you go up one side of me and down the other. No problem at all. But the minute you tell me I'm raising my kids wrong, or you bring my kids into any conversation, the button's been hit. I went off and told him he is part of the problem. It is okay for the left to have John Dingell say, you can take two flying jumps to hell. Nothing said. You can have Rashida Tlaib say, We're going to impeach that MF-er. That's fine. You can have Maxine Waters. Have her, or tell her constituents and everybody, if you see a supporter of Donald Trump, you threaten them. You make them feel uncomfortable. That is fine. But Donald Trump says one asinine thing, and all of a sudden everybody wants an apology. I get it. Donald Trump said an asinine thing. He should apologize. He should say, you know, that was probably not the right thing to say. I'm sorry. But my problem is, and this is what I told the guy, why is it okay for the left to do everything, but the right, when they do something wrong? And look, we're all human. I've said it before. I don't trust both parties. I don't think anybody's perfect. We all make mistakes. But why does the right have to be the one to apologize every time? The left has a free pass. You can say anything you want. Kathy Griffin cut the president's head off in a video. Yeah, that was okay. You know, it's art. Good God. If you had, that's a hard question. Yeah. Gary Sinise, James Woods, he's a Republican. If he cut the head off Barack Obama, oh my God, that guy would have been tarred and feathered and thrown into the lake. Because he's on the right side, but the left side can do anything. So I said, listen, don't bring my kids into it. You're part of the problem. And then he went off on me. This is part of the left. You can't talk to anybody on the left and have a different opposing view without them going batshit crazy. It's a given. You know, we tolerated 8 years of Obama. Yes, he was a terrible president. We weren't happy about it. But we didn't do 99% of the stuff that the left is doing. But it's okay. The 1% that we did, we ripped on his tan suit. And we were Nazis. We were horrible people for it. If that is all they did was rip on Donald Trump and his ties that are too long, I wouldn't give one brat's behind. Again, I've said it millions of times. I elected this man to save me money, to create an economy that is growing, and to keep me safe. He's done all three. I'm voting for him again in 2020. It's a no-brainer. But this guy just continually, I mean, he's going off on me, and I just stopped. I'm done. I'm done arguing with him because, he makes himself look like a fool. And I'm not, I like the guy. I really do. We talked all the time when we worked together. But I'm going to have to defriend him because, not because he shares a different political point of view, because I'll say over half of my friends on Facebook share a different political point of view than I do. I tolerate it. I let them say their piece. And 90% of those people let me say mine. But this guy just, he's one of these raging liberals that can't stand Trump because he's been indoctrinated. It's the world we live in today. And if you live in Virginia, boy, is your world crashing down on you. If you listen to the news all the time, you may have no idea what's going on here because on the news, it's nothing but impeachment, impeachment, impeachment. But what nobody's talking about is November's Virginia elections. That led to the Democrats taking control of both houses and both chambers. And that has led to gun control legislation that has been proposed by some Democrats in having much, much stricter regulations. Now the push to pass gun control laws, that may not alarm anyone because it's such a common theme in the Democratic-controlled news media now. But this time, in Virginia, it's different. The Virginia Democrats have proposed several measures, including an assault weapon ban, universal background checks, and a red flag law. Now, for those of you who don't know what a red flag law is, that is, well, let's just put it this way. You can use an anonymous call to turn somebody you think may be a danger into the authorities. So let's just say you've got a beef with your neighbor down the road, and you know he's got a lot of guns. You can call your local police department and say, hey, I live at this such and such address, and My neighbor down the road at this address, he is talking crazy talk. He's talking about how he's going to shoot up the government and everything. And I've seen in his basement, he has a pretty big arsenal. I'm just saying, you might want to be prepared. Well, that would set off a quote-unquote red flag, and the police would be involved. So therefore, if I have police officers at my door wanting to talk to me about my guns, now that could cause a problem. So you could basically have neighbor against neighbor. You don't like somebody, you're going to turn them in for being a quote-unquote threat. These are scary, scary laws, and they harken back to Soviet Russia, where neighbors were turning in neighbors, and those neighbors were sent to the gulag and never to be seen again. This is kind of what is happening in Virginia right now. Now, listen, truth be told, Governor Ralph Northam of Virginia has not come out and said, we're going to take your guns. What this all stems from is Representative Donald McEachran. He suggested, and he said, ultimately, I'm not the governor, but the governor may have to nationalize the National Guard to enforce the law. That's his call, because I don't know how serious these counties are and how severe the violations of the law will be, but obviously that's an option he had. Now, what that stems from is after hearing all of these ridiculous gun control laws, 75 counties, and I believe there's 91, correct me if I'm wrong on that, I believe there's 91 counties in Virginia. 75 counties have considered themselves a Second Amendment sanctuary county, which means they will not be enforcing those gun control laws. In other words, the police officers and the people in that county will not be enforcing the gun control laws set forth by the governor. Now, the first question I have on this, I don't know why this is the first thing that popped into my head, but you've got 75 out of 91-ish counties have already, and there's more that are contemplating this, but there's 75 already counties that have said, boom, we are not going to adhere to these laws. So I'm going to assume there's a lot of conservatives and Republicans in those counties. How did the Democrats take control? Secondly, this representative has basically scared these people into taking further action. Now, these counties are now preparing the militia. And I know, I've said it before, militia, you say that word and all of a sudden, oh my gosh, bad name, those are homegrown terrorists. No. The militia are country-loving patriots. I'm sure you've got some crazy folk in there, but I've talked to many people in the Michigan militia, and they are here, and they are ready to defend this country and this state from exactly what our founding fathers put a militia in place for, is against a tyrannical, overpowering government. And at this point, this is what the people of Virginia think is going to happen. They think that the National Guard is going to be called up to go door to door to start gathering guns from the people who will not give them up willingly. Ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you something. If this whole impeachment charade has not woken up the Republicans, the conservatives of this country, this will. Conservatives in nature are pretty quiet and pretty mellow. We don't like to cause a fight. We let Obama go through and fundamentally change this country. We let him run his course. We corrected that course with Donald Trump. We are getting riled up right now because the Democrats see what is happening. They see that the core of this country, the majority of this country, And you can sit there, Democrats, and you can tell me that, whoa, Hillary Clinton won the majority of the votes. You can sit there and you can convince yourself that that's the truth. Did she win more votes than Donald Trump? Yes. But the founding fathers, in their infinite wisdom, knew that you can't have little pockets of the country decide for the rest of the country. That's why they developed the Electoral College. So every state is represented. That is the fairest way, the most fair way to do it. If that were the case, New York and Los Angeles would dictate who is the president every single time, and we would be a third world country by now. It is the heart of the country, the Midwest, that really tells this country which way is best. Because those are the heart and soul of this country. The people in New York, especially in California and Los Angeles, the Hollywood elites, they have no idea how this country really works. They're too busy raping kids. Ooh, did I really say that out loud? Well, truth hurts. Anyway, the people of Virginia, they can see the writing on the wall. They can see that they have a democratically controlled state, which I still don't know how it got that way, seeing how opposed to the democratic values that these people are. But, you know, voter fraud is a subject for a different show. But they can see the writing on the wall, so they are going to implement sanctuary cities, sanctuary counties of the Second Amendment. And the Democrats are all up in arms. Now, see, here's where I have another issue with the Democrats. They are for the law. The law is the law. If we pass a law, you have to abide by that. Only if it benefits the Democratic Party. In other words, illegal immigration, illegal or ICE deportation, stuff like that, that doesn't matter to the Democrats because that doesn't benefit them. This isn't a one-way street, guys. It's a two-way street. You have to work both ways. So these sanctuary cities are now in the process. They're sanctuary counties. I keep saying sanctuary cities, but it's sanctuary counties are now in the process of deputizing their citizens because they can see. They want to be prepared for any potential conflict. And again, you have riled up the conservatives in this country with this vast charade circus of an impeachment process. You start going door to door, bringing in the National Guard. Ladies and gentlemen, you have got a full-blown civil war on your hands. It's not going to be pretty. I'm telling you right now, I live in Michigan. Michigan, everybody has a gun. And they don't use it for killing people. They use it for hunting or target practice or just a hobby of shooting. They don't use it to kill people. You know, you have 44 million guns, I think it is, in this country. And I think that's a light estimate. How many shootings do you have? And most of these shootings are from criminals or from mentally insane people who should be under a doctor's care. Maybe that's where the problem lies. Maybe we're letting these people who are posting on social media, hey, I'm going to kill these people. Hey, isn't that a cute little quote? He ain't going to do it. Holy cow, he actually did it. Or the FBI, the illustrious FBI that nobody has any faith in anymore because it's been proven they're just a partisan hack group now. And no offense to the good FBI agents. I know there's some out there, but listen, you're all bunched into one apple now. When somebody says FBI, everybody looks at you as tainted because of your illustrious former leader, James Comey. But if the FBI would actually follow up on some of these people that they've had on their watch list, I mean, look at every mass shooting. The majority of these people, yeah, he was on a watch list. He was on an FBI watch list. Why was he just being watched? Take him in. Why is he not being watched as he's loading these guns into his vehicle, driving to the school, driving to the synagogue, driving to the mall? Why is he not being watched? And then we're stunned when he actually shoots somebody. Well, you know, we can't just detain him. That would be against the law. Okay, why are you following the law now? You won't follow the law with illegal immigration. You won't follow the law with mass deportations of illegal immigrants. It's not a pick and choose type thing, Democrats. That's what I keep telling you. If it's the law, it's the law. You can't say, hey, we're going to pass a law and you're going to follow it. This law that's already on the books, though, we're not going to follow it. You think this is only going to stop in Virginia? We have a governor that has sent a letter to President Trump here in Michigan. Our governor, Gretchen Whitmer, I didn't vote for her. She sent a letter to President Trump saying, hey, we welcome illegal immigrants. We welcome immigrants into our state. Who is she speaking for? Because I know the majority of the people in this state do not want illegal immigrants here for the simple fact that they're illegal. We have to pay for them. This is what my biggest issue is. Alyssa Slotkin, who represents the district just south of me in Michigan, voted for impeachment. Gary Peters voted for impeachment. They had town halls and literally got shouted down by their constituents saying, do not impeach this man. There's nothing to impeach him for. But they did it anyway because they don't represent us anymore. This is what the legislation, the government in Virginia is doing. They're not representing their people. They think, you don't know what you're talking about. We know what's best. We're going to put these gun control laws into place. And this idiot Democrat representative said, yeah, we may use the National Guard. The National Guard came out and said, whoa, hold on there, Virginia. We aren't making any promises as to what we're doing until we look into this. Now, the question begs to be asked. Is it even legal for the state to activate the National Guard to pull off such a stunt? So I've done some research and I found that the president, who as commander-in-chief of the armed forces, is the only person who can nationalize the Guard. But state governors have the latitude to use it to enforce state law. Now, until nationalized, it's a creature of the state. So that leads what Gary Solis, a military law professor at Georgetown University, told the Washington Examiner. He said, that's what leads me to believe, yes, the governor can activate the National Guard to enforce even a state law. Amy Swearer, who is a legal political analyst who works on gun control issues, agreed that the governor has the right to use the Virginia National Guard to enforce the law, though it would break from past mobilizations. She said, when you look at the historical reality of when governors or presidents have mobilized the National Guard, it has been to enforce the right of citizens when they are being infringed upon. But to suggest the National Guard would be brought into otherwise peaceful jurisdictions to enforce restrictions on constitutional rights, that would be completely unprecedented in terms of how the National Guard had been used when it's mobilized to restore law and order. But what Ms. Swearer doesn't know is that that's how the Democrats work nowadays. They will change the rules to benefit them because they see that this is slipping from them. They saw in 2018, look, we got the people. And all of a sudden, the people are like, no. We don't want this impeachment thing. We don't. What have you done other than try to impeach Donald Trump? You haven't done anything for us. And they're losing their grip on their power. Trust me, this whole impeachment thing is not going to turn out well for the Democrats in 2020 at all. Now, again, Virginia is mobilizing a militia. And again, I've said it before, militia is a bad term, but it's not. These militiamen are country-loving patriots who are there to protect us against a tyrannical government. That is why our government wants to get our guns away from us. Make no mistake about it. The government, the Democrats want to get our guns away from us so they can take control. You can't fight back if you don't have guns. Gun control does not work. Look at Chicago. Chicago is a mess. Chicago's a war zone, and they've got the strictest gun control laws in the country. It doesn't work. Why? Because the only people who have guns are the criminals. The law-abiding citizens can't protect themselves, nor can they stop anybody from doing anything wrong. When are people going to realize this? This is a mental health problem. There's something that has gone wrong in the human condition that has made these people just lash out. But 90% of them have been under watch from the FBI. They've known that these people are unstable. But yet, it still happens. I mean, if I was a conspiracy theorist, I would say that they've almost let it happen to further gun control. You can't have this country without guns. It's not going to happen. I mean, I'll tell you that right now. Again, in Michigan, everybody has a gun. And everybody says, you know, they may get my guns from me, but there's going to be a lot of dead agents in my front yard. That is the stand of people in Michigan. I got to imagine that's the stand of people around this country. You want to see a civil war break out? You do that. You do that, Virginia, because I know right now, talking to members of the Michigan militia, I talked to them before this show. I said, let me ask you this. Let's just say, just out of curiosity, that the National Guard did become mobilized down in Virginia, and they did start going home to home, and they started rounding up people who would not give up their guns. What happens? Every single one of the members of the Michigan militia said, we would be down there in an instant fighting for those people. You want to bring about a war in this country, Democrats? Start taking our guns. I don't care if it's a law or not. It is a constitutional right to bear arms. And the reason for that constitutional right is to protect ourselves against a tyrannical government as yourself. I've had so many people say, well, you don't need assault rifles. You don't need fully automatic rifles. That's just overkill. Well, listen, technology changes, and our government would use those fully automatic assault rifles against us. So we, as a well-armed militia, would need fully automatic assault rifles to counter that attack. Listen, the militias around the country, at this moment that you are listening to this, they are mobilizing, and they are ready to go. Democrats in Virginia and Democrats around the country, it's just like World War II. You are Japan, Democrats. You have awoken the beast that is the conservatives of this country. We are at the point. We took so much. But now we've had enough, and we're rising up. And that is your worst nightmare, because we've been quiet. We've let you do your thing. But now you're infringing on our rights, and you're threatening us. Now, it's scary. This is a scary time, because I really don't think the National Guard is going to be mobilized in Virginia. But let me tell you, just the fact that they're even talking about it should scare every single American in this country. When our government even talks about mobilizing a military force against its citizens, what does that tell you? What does that tell you? That tells you they are afraid. They will do anything to stay in power. They will do anything to take your guns. The people of America, the conservatives of America, will not stand for it. They will fight back. So that's the show for this week. I hope you enjoyed the Christmas show this week. I know the last segment wasn't very Christmas related, but I do what my listeners want. So what I wanted to do is, because it's Christmas, I have one Christmas song that I listen to every year, pretty much on repeat. It's a song that was made famous by Nat King Cole, and the original's always the best, right? Well, this one is a phenomenal, phenomenal version of what is called the Christmas song. I want to play it for you as a have a Merry Christmas, have a Happy New Year. Just going to try to end this show on a positive note. So one of my favorite all-time Christmas songs is by Tate, and it's called The Christmas Song. I hope every single one of you have a very, very Merry Christmas. Make those memories. You have been listening to The Paranormal Patriot. My name is Tom Velasquez. I'll talk to you next week.
It's cold tonight. The moon is bright. There's magic in the air. You can be sure around the world they're singing everywhere. Oh, chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, Yuletide carols being sung by a choir, and folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows a turkey and some mistletoe help to make the season bright. Tiny tots with their eyes all aglow will find it hard to sleep tonight. They know that Santa's on his way. He's loaded lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh. And every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeer really know how to fly. This simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas. Santa's on his way. He's loaded lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh. And every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeer really know how to fly. And so I'm offering this simple phrase from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, many